up by Mormons. Can't wait to see which one will they choose. This week in Mormons, you get a Joseph Smith style. With more and knee up on the whole tea up and out. How's the big bearded guy from Missouri? The office, the bearded nationalist from D.C. This week, you get the funny stuff, the fun things. Like what casserole will be made for General Conference. Or what we're...
Yeehaw, everybody! That's right. I wanted to start this show the exact opposite way of Josie's special podcast from Sunday, which is very calm and measured.
You blew out our speakers, Jeff.
I did not. I leaned back like a pop singer hitting the loud high notes. You know, right. That's what you do so you don't overdrive the mic, man. I learned
you're a true professional.
I really am. People listen to This Week in Mormons. That's the name of the show in your ear as you speak, in case you're tuning in for the first time. To hear my professional, you know, audio production capabilities.
If I was somebody tuning in for the first time, Jeff, what on earth, how would you explain this thing called This Week in Mormons?
I feel like it's gone past the point of being able to be explained.
What about like when your ministering brothers come over and they're like, so Jeff, like, what are your hobbies? And you're like, oh, I got a podcast. And
first of all, no one's visited my home except for a member of the stake presidency in like over a year. And I've always felt weird in a church setting bringing up the podcast, not because I'm ashamed in any way, but because I don't want to feel like I'm milking like ward membership to get a fan base, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Believe me, Jeff, that makes sense to me. That's for sure.
I mean, I talk about it if asked, and that's fine, but I don't like to go out of my way and have, I just don't want people to think I'm trying to promote it.
Are there people in your ward that listen and they like see on Sundays and they're like, hey, great episode.
There might be a few. Nobody tells me about the episode, but I have noticed some people in my ward, unbeknownst to me, have liked like some of our Facebook content.
Nice.
So I've seen a little bit of that, a couple of voices here and there. But anyone listening in my ward, which shall remain nameless, but if you're in my ward, you know who you are. Hit me up.
Washington and D.C. 12th Ward.
Sure. There are not 12 wards in D.C., I'll tell you that. Hit me up, dog. Find me on Sunday and say, I heard you, and I love you, and I need you, and give me a hug because I like them. I could use a good hug.
So, Jeff, this is, speaking of that, let me tell you how famous I am.
By the way, everybody, this is Kurt Frankum of Leading Saints, in case you didn't know who's the person talking.
Which I have my own podcast, and I have to try and explain, well, it's this thing and leadership and in the context of the church.
Before you get to that briefly, let me try to elevator pitch it since you asked me to do that, and then I'll turn it over to you. If someone were to ask me, I would say This Week in Mormons is a podcast devoted to a robust yet sometimes humorous overview of news facing and issues facing the Latter-day Saint community, where we cover the news and have special guests from time to time. Sure.
And I think you need to add that you are a faithful card-carrying member of the church, because the first time I heard This Week in Mormons, it took me about 6 or 7 episodes where I thought, okay, I think they're in.
Oh, it's probably Al just running off at the mouth. Then you probably heard him drop something like, then I was in the high council meeting, and you're like, Charlie, what now? Excuse me?
I've got to track down a stake president and notify him.
This schmo is in the high council? So, as you were, tell us what's going on your end on the Leading Saints.
Yeah, so I was telling you, as far as like people approaching you about podcasts, I am, many of you may not know, that I am a caricature artist, and you can follow me on Instagram at DrawYouFunny. But anyways,
He draws you really funny.
I do. I do corporate events and weddings. So I'm at this wedding last Friday, and I'm doing my business, drawing people funny. And there's a line behind us that, you know, the receiving line, because it's a horrible tradition we have in Utah. And
receiving lines aren't.
People are watching me draw. People are watching me draw as they're waiting in line, and then suddenly I hear, "Hey, honey, it's the Kurt Frankum." And I turn around and I see these people. I have no idea who they are. And they're like, we're big fans. And I thought, of my caricatures? And they said, no, Leading Saints.
Definitely that. They're like, draw you funny, changed my marriage.
Yes. Anyway, so I do run into...
That's great.
I've had various encounters with people that recognize me. I was at Fan X as well. Yeah. And a guy in the Princess Swan or Swan whatever booth said, hey, I know you. leading saints. Anyways, I'm really famous, Jeff. I think that's what I'm trying to get across here.
I would also say the most recognition I feel like I got at church or elsewhere was probably within like the first 18 months of TWIM's existence. And I don't know if that's because we were more of a novelty then. There are so many LDS podcasts now compared to then. And but especially when I moved to DC, where I didn't know anybody. I knew nobody when I moved here. I'm just like bumping into people at church and they're like, "You're that guy who runs that This Week in Mormons podcast." And it was almost like, yes. It was more uncomfortable than anything because it felt weird to me that there were people all the way across the other side of the country. I moved from LA and all of a sudden I'm in DC and there's like random girls and women in my ward who knew who I was. And none of them were worthy of my dating time. So I didn't, you know, I couldn't.
Because you were single at this time. Yeah.
I couldn't let them be groupies. It wasn't right. Worth it.
Didn't somebody recognize Al's voice in an elevator?
Probably. What a surprise.
I remember
that.
Yeah,
some story like that happened once. Yeah, yeah. If memories.
This Week in Mormons, you're like, he's like, yeah, man.
So. Yeah, here and there. But now I'm more anonymous than I used to be.
So you've been a bachelor for a few days, huh?
It's been a busy couple of weeks, I guess, because last week we'd had the interview with the Bagleys, who do the Mormon Marriages podcast. That was good. But I recorded it like weeks ago. So that's why I feel like I haven't sat down and recorded in a while. Yeah, a lot's been going on. That's why last week's published, because I was in California at the time and didn't want to deal with podcast publishing while I was there. So we flew to California a couple weeks ago for my dad's 70th birthday.
Wow.
Which was great. My parents are divorced, so my dad lives just by himself in a little apartment. And my mom currently lives in China, so her house is off limits while she rents it. So it was great. We got an Airbnb. I got all my siblings. My siblings live all around the West. None of us live in California right now. We got a house. My brother came down with his kid. And it was great because his son and my two sons had never met. That side of cousins have never been together or anything. So
some cousin bonding going on.
Boys all played. We all had a good time. My dad didn't know we were coming. We surprised him. So it was great. He cried and it was a lot of fun. So we had a great time there. And
what was the reveal? How did you surprise him? You tell the story.
It wasn't as good as when I did my mom's 60th, which was excellent, but all of whatever. Send me an email if you want to hear that one. But so my dad's, we went to a restaurant and he only knew my younger sister was coming into town. She lives in Phoenix. So hers is the most realistic, like, yeah, it's your birthday weekend, Dad, I'll drive out. You know, it's a 5-hour drive for her. So she said she was going to drive out and see him and meet him for breakfast. And so we all kind of hit around a corner. I got the people at the restaurant to let us sit in an unused part of the restaurant, like for bigger groups in the back. And we went and hid there, and he just walked in, and then we were around the corner. He couldn't see us at the table or anything. We surprised him. It was just that. We just said surprise, and he was stunned.
He wept like a child.
Oh, yeah. You know, he misses his kids. Why wouldn't he?
Sure. You know, that's sweet, Jeff.
We're all gone. So it was really nice. It was great. And then, like you mentioned, the bachelor thing. So, you know, my wife's from San Diego, so we went down there. I stayed a couple days down there with the in-laws and that gang, and then I took off, came back to D.C., and they stayed for some extra time. So I've been hanging out here by my lonesome, doing lots of stuff because we're redoing our kitchen. So I've basically been hanging out, and it's great timing because I don't have young children trying to avoid being destroyed by debris and tools and such. And now it's far enough along that it's safe for them to come home. And that was good. And I changed jobs. So last week I ended my employee at one place and I started another one this week. It's been very busy. Lots has been happening.
Awesome.
Yeah. Busy
time. Living the dream.
But yeah.
Now the wife comes back tonight, right?
Yes. By the time all of you hear this, she will be back. Okay. I guarantee this will not be published before they arrive.
Break in Jeff's house. Great.
That's why I didn't want to. I wasn't going to be the one to say it, but thank you. If you have an interest in a late 80s townhome.
With an unfinished kitchen.
A soon-to-be finished kitchen.
Oh, okay.
But an unfinished half of basement. Anyway, on your personal end, everything going well. How was the Questioning Saints Summit? I don't know if everyone knows about that, but
yeah. So to give some background, so we do these virtual summits over at Leading Saints. This is our third one. We did Motivating Saints and Teaching Saints, and now this last few weeks we did Questioning Saints. So basically, it was content all around the idea of how do we, as whether leaders, parents, Orthodox members of the church, better minister to those who are questioning their faith. And it was fantastic. We had 1,600 or so register and attend, you know, virtually.
That's huge. Is that your biggest one? Tell us all of your numbers and private metrics.
Yeah, I'm pretty transparent with that, about that stuff. But it was definitely, I don't know, I think the Teaching Saints one was bigger, but that's more of a general topic, even though Questioning Saints is quite general. But I mean, let me give you an example of how awesome this was. I got this email that said, "Ah, this content is too good. Seriously, I have told you before about my free fall into faith crisis, and the Leading Saints podcast stopped the free fall and has given me a ladder to climb back out. Thank you is not just enough. Life-saving stuff, my friend." That's the email.
So we have it right there. Their words, Kurt Frankham saves lives.
Yeah. So, and if you, there's still 3 sessions available if you want to go check it out at leadingsaints.org/questioning. And, of course, we're always putting good content out there. At
least you even did an interview with Tad Arcalister recently, didn't you?
I did.
That's a big one. Yeah, that's a big one.
It was. And he was a tough interview, to be honest. I mean, I think the editing and helped with to hide that a little bit, but he's an attorney. So he was very direct and, you know, usually you interview people, as you know, Jeff, you sort of want them to expound on different stories and experiences. And I'd ask him a question and he'd give me about 4 words. I'd be like, okay, well, and I didn't feel like he was like dodging my question or anything. I think he was just very thoughtful.
During interviews like that every now and then, if I've interviewed people, like a lot of the time, if people have the capability and the know-how and everything, I like to get them to record themselves to have the best quality audio file, you know, and just send it over our way and then we'll put it together afterwards. But if it doesn't work that way, I hop on something like Zencastr just to capture it. And whenever an interview is going is iffy, or if I want to just say forget it and burn the village down, I wish I was on Zencastr just so I'd get all their audio no matter what happens, even if they get so upset with me, they hang up and then I can still publish it. Not that you want to upset Tad Arcalister, but he's no longer a general anything. So you can say whatever.
Right.
This was post-release from Sunday
School? Oh, yeah. Sure. So, but it's always fun to sit down with those guys and
fun to sit down with those general authorities and general officers and hang out.
Because I'm really famous, Jeff, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. Anyways, no, it was great.
Well, I think you need to try to sit down with Jean B. Bingham. Can you get her?
No, I don't. I think I've actually tried to interview the wife of a 70 and they even turned me down there because, you know, it's all official. They're the voice of the church. Obviously their wife isn't, but anyways, I doubt that the general Relief Society president would.
That's actually a very interesting thing that you just brought up. You said the wife isn't, and I've been thinking about this a little bit actually. Lately, and I've been debating whether it's worth exploring, not through a snarky article. I'm worried if I write about this, there's no way it'll be fairly received by any front. So I'll just float it here on the podcast. My thesis is essentially prophets' wives are not general authorities, comma, so why do we listen to them? You see, I mean, that's a little polemic, but so I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but it is an interesting point because I think we've seen this pivot in recent years, and I welcome it, to be clear. That general authorities, namely the 12 and the first presidency, travel around with their wives. And if they speak, their wife is also speaking. It's not like their wife is the one who introduces the keynote speaker like it's been in the past. They've really worked harder to bring their spouses in to make it a joint thing. I think that's great. You know, it's more inclusive. It gives the women higher visibility. And I think that's really wonderful and important. But on the flip side, the other part of me does think about this and say, they're not called as, I mean, they're... Like they're speaking to the church and teaching us and giving us things, and they're not called or set apart. I mean, I don't know if they're set apart as a prophet's wife. That could be a thing, because like when you're a mission president's wife, you're kind of... Anyway,
yeah.
I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but it's something I've thought about a little bit. I'm trying not to do it in a tricky way.
And I wonder, you know, when Sister Bingham travels around, does her husband speak, you think?
I don't even know what he looks like.
I don't think so.
Let's look up Jean B. Bingham husband. I bet he's hot.
There is the title of this episode.
His name is, Jeff. Oh, there's plenty of pictures.
I bet he's hot.
His name is Bruce Bingham. He's lacking hair on top of his head, but he looks like a great guy.
This just got suddenly weird, Jeff.
He looks like a great guy. So, I mean, look at them.
Wow.
They're smiling. They're so happy. They're standing and somewhere in Salt Lake City. It looks like the plaza between the two church buildings. Good times all around. Good old Bruce. Making it happen, man. I don't know. Do you think there's anything to that? Do you think the pros outweigh any of the cons, and that it's good to have more visibility and counsel from women, even if those women, unlike someone like, say, Sister Bingham, who's called and set apart for a specific role, those women don't have like an organizational or doctrinal place necessarily to be filling that role. And I know I'm on very slippery and thin ice.
I know, but this is it. We're just talking, Jeff.
We're just talking. I'm just right? curious about other people's thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's nice to see the visibility. I think you learn something, you know, when we speak just in context of like the Quorum of the Twelve and First Presidency. I think you learn more about the prophet when you hear from his spouse.
Of course.
You
know,
and
of course.
You it becomes more endearing to that individual.
And everyone loves Sister Hinckley. Like, it's not like this is totally.
Oh, yeah.
But I think part of that is just by nature, Marjorie Hinckley just got herself in the mix. She was a little fireball, and that's just.
Yeah. And I think since Marjorie Hinckley, the prophet's wife is definitely more, has a higher profile publicly. Right?
I don't feel like Frances Monson had a very high profile, though. I remember when she passed away and there was a lot of pomp and circumstance about it.
Yeah.
And
I think her health was maybe worse than Sister Hinckley's, right?
Because part of me felt bad because I thought, like, this is important. It's important to the prophet. But no, I didn't feel like she was this, like, known, beloved figure in the church at the same level as Sister Hinckley, you know, when we were.
Well, and I guess I take that back because obviously Sister Benson was, her health, I don't think was very good, but Sister Kimball actually read a conference talk in lieu of President Kimball.
They should bring that back. That's straight up like Woodrow Wilson territory man.
Just announce it and see Sister Nelson walk up there and drop the mic.
Wendy!
So
she has her detractors because of that Not Even Once Club book from years ago, but that's not really. We had a whole, I think that's one of our old issues. I think if you look up Not Even Once on our website, there's a podcast that dealt with that.
It's probably from
2012 or something like that. It's been a long time ago. But speaking of Sister Bingham, though, so we saw that, I love they did the women's conference last weekend, right? The BYU Women's Conference. Great gathering.
I was there, Jeff, front row.
You were?
Taking notes.
Were you there?
No. No, I wasn't. I don't know. Can I go? I mean, I guess I could threaten a lawsuit if they didn't let me in.
You sound like all the men in my ward who try to join the ward Facebook group, which is exclusively women. Like, they don't let men be in it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, they won't even approve you?
Pretty much not. No, they don't. They're not. It's like, okay. When will men have their day, Kurt? When will men have their day?
I know. We're such a...
So the women's conference, we're not going to do a full rundown of it or anything.
But there was a moment. There was a sentence that was uttered.
So what was cool...
They called out the Twitter mob.
Yeah, which is sad because in the end, I like what they did in general. They did basically a town hall equivalent where the presidents of Relief Society, Young Women, and Primary all got together and hung out with none other than, of course, Sherry Dew. Who else would be there? She's the crown jewel of capable Mormon adult women, apparently. And Kurt's being very careful because Deseret Book helps him with things. I see him just sitting there biting his tongue about anything said about anybody with Deseret Book.
I'm still trying to swing an interview with Sherry Dew. She's like top of my bucket list.
She's hard to get.
She's the only person that's told me no so many times, at least her assistant.
I should have got her. The same night I met McKay Coppins, back when I went to that thing with Elder Christofferson over the winter, I walked up a staircase and Sherry Dew was just standing right there along the railing next to me. And I didn't shake her hand or anything. I should have. I should have shaken her hand and given her a cookie. Anywho, so they did. So they had like this forum, you know, the typical thing. Sherry Dew was moderating, talking to the three of them. And then they took some questions from the audience. I don't know if the questions were probably pre-screened, I would assume. And they only did a few of them. But in one of the questions was, and I'm paraphrasing, how do you deal with male church leaders who essentially don't want to give you the time of, just don't want to take your counsel seriously? Like, how do you work with difficult male leadership?
Right, which don't exist, Jeff. We all know that.
Of course not.
right.
And Sister Bingham, as you know, well, actually, as no one knows, what did Sister Bingham do, Kurt? Tell the audience, tell the people what happened. What did she say?
Like, what did she say?
Yeah. I'm tired of talking. It's too much
makeup. Sure. She basically said she, you know, was dealing with a brother that was a leader that I assume it's the bishop. I don't know if she said that, but there was a difficult interaction and relationship. And I think we've all been in those scenarios at some point in our life. And she came home from a meeting that was very discouraging and slammed her purse down and her husband said something. Bruce said,
"So you know he has a name. He's not even named in the story. That's the sad thing.
Good looking Bruce said, "Oh, it's one of those purse slamming meetings, right?" And then she said yes, but then she mentioned how she worked out that relationship through communication and then she said the phrase, what's the phrase? I'm trying to pull up the article here, Jeff.
Well, it's from the Trib, so of course they're stupid paywall. But yeah, she said, but she didn't say that she was. She said, we women essentially have a tendency to be shrill and demanding. Which was an interesting way of expressing an idea. I think other words could have been used that would have been much more benign to express an idea of women being, I don't know, obstinate, stubborn. We could use all kinds of words. I think she actually said stubborn. But she said that as one part of this whole response, and I think what was she trying to say that, hey, maybe they can also take a step back as women and like try to be more pliable and patient and work with the situation? Is that her main counsel?
Yes, I believe so. But, and again, even talking to you, Jeff, on this microphone, it's sometimes intimidating or difficult to, sometimes I say things and listen to it later and think, ah, man, why did I say it like that?
I do that all the time.
So. Yeah, and that's it breaks my heart when I see, you know, when she says something, I don't think she meant how other people are taking it, and especially in the social media world. And so, but yeah, it's but I, you know, at least more female voices are out there and being heard, and so maybe we should just be grateful for that, and not jump on a dog pile when they
use a word. And people, many took it poorly. That was the point. Not to be outdone, of course, our very own Tiffany Hale is one of the twin sisters. Sounded off on this, just basically she really took issue saying like, I am not shrill. My mom has never been shrill. When I've stood up to priesthood leadership straight up for being wrong, and even if we've worked things out, I have not been like a shrill, difficult, stubborn woman. I have been like someone who needs to be heard. She wrote a whole think piece about it on our website as an open letter.
And you published it, Jeff?
I did. Oh, my goodness. I did, with the editor's note that says the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the publication.
You said the views that expressed here may sound very shrill, but they're not our views.
I should have said that.
Love you, Tiffany. Okay.
I should have said that. That would have been pretty funny. Oh, I love the picture that came with this article from Deseret News. There's some moment when Jean B. Bingham's there, and she's got Joy D. Jones, who's the primary president, and Bonnie H. Corden, who's the young women's president. And Joy D. Jones brings out like a bag of popcorn or something. And I don't know what was happening. Did you see this picture? I don't know what was happening. I'm just
seeing this for the first time.
Like, Jean Bingham's face is like, what? And Sister Corden is sitting there doing like the, and it was this big gesture.
This is, they were doing the mannequin challenge right now. they were actually holding this, and then they were like, someone was moving the phone around.
I don't know.
That's awesome.
Why they're so excited about the gift of popcorn in a bag. I mean, if she brought out Jeff. If she brought out something really useful, like a Google Home Max, or something, said, here, you know, have some smart home in your life. Maybe that would have been good, but...
Do you know what this reminds me of, Jeff?
It's so random. It looks like a pineapple.
Is the meme, you're going to love this, the meme of Hillary Clinton when the fireworks went off at one of her, like... Anyways, it is...
Which meme is that?
I'm sending it to you. We can link to it. I'll put it in the comments here.
Share it with me. I've probably seen it before, but I can't.
It's hilarious because it's so like...
Because Hillary lost and you still laugh about it? Is that why?
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious because Hillary was... Anyways, there it is. Check that.
Little Jiffy.
The overreaction is just priceless.
Oh, I think I remember this one. Oh, yeah, that one.
Oh, wow. But it's tough. I mean, when you're on a stage, you just overreact.
You just got to be like Mitt Romney and always let the dogs out.
Man.
That's what you got to do. I feel so bad for him. Just because of his Facebook page is full of nothing but like Trump trolls is the only way to put it.
Oh, really?
I feel so bad for him. He'll post this like normal stuff. Like he took a trip to Israel recently. Just said, it was great. We got to meet with the foreign minister and talk about what Israel's doing for this and that. Like a totally normal, nice thing to publish. And everyone's just like, support the president, you rhino. Support the president. It's just, they're so mean. I feel so bad for him. It's totally uncalled for.
All right.
No civil discourse. So, Kurt, what else has been happening this week in the world of Mormon, no, Latter-day Saint news?
Well, I don't know if you heard, Jeff, but the church changed quite a significant policy when it comes to...
Oh, is this
to...
the word of wisdom? How it got rescinded during conference?
Yeah, I had my first cup of coffee. No, it there's now no restriction to, if you're married civilly, to be sealed as soon as possible. I'm trying to... Where'd you move all these articles, Jeff? I can't find it.
I didn't move them anywhere. They're in the Trello feed that we use.
Okay, I'm sorry. But anyways, that's...
They're literally in the same place. They always are.
Oh, here it is. Yeah, okay. What do you think about this, Jeff? I mean,
I think it sucks. They shouldn't do it. Everyone should be punished.
But this is... I mean, it's one of those things you always knew was coming, especially since in other countries, this has been the case for quite some time. But and it just seems so, I don't know, unnecessary, right?
It did. I believe the policy dated to like the 70s, didn't it? It's not even that old.
No, I don't know if you saw this article I posted, Jeff.
I'm looking at it now, and
it goes back to 1956.
Elder Renlund was wearing that suit, man. Look at him at his wedding.
He was
legit.
So I guess this started way back in 1956.
Is that Elder Rasband? Oh my gosh. Oh, look at that hair. He is glistening. He is just... Oh my goodness. Okay, continue on. I'm just going to sit here and marvel.
You've now checked out multiple men in this.
I noticed beauty in all genders.
Which, hey man, nothing wrong with that, right? Yeah, there's pictures of Elder Hale's, Elder Rasband, and Elder Renlund's wedding day pictures. So you'll have to check it out. But it goes through the history of this policy.
Yes, very useful.
And so it officially became policy in 1956. And then I was surprised. I sort of just quickly read over this, but even there was a time that if you got married civilly, they requested that you not call it, like, even if you asked, hey, are you guys married in the temple? If you were married civilly first and then sealed later, that was not a temple marriage. That was just a sealing. And then there's even the case at one point where if you were married civilly, you could not qualify for even a temple recommend in general, even to go to a session.
Well, because obviously you didn't get married in the temple because you were fooling around and not worthy of it. What? Clearly. That's the only possible explanation.
I sent some snark, Jeff.
A little bit.
But anyways, I'm kind of surprised that was a thing. But we're here now.
There was one exception to it, though. If you were to marry a convert of less than a year.
Yeah, yeah.
My understanding was if you married someone who'd been a member of the church for like 3 months or something like that, because they couldn't go to the temple. Right. And most converts, you wait a year-ish if you receive your endowment. Then really, like, once your spouse were to hit their year mark or so in the church, then you can just go get sealed. So that was kind of the one exception I was aware of.
And then there's some other exceptions, like if they had a ways to travel and they needed to stay over, that required you to stay overnight nights, then you could get civilly married. Or obviously, if the government didn't recognize the temple sealing as a marriage.
Well, yeah, but that's a whole different issue because this really, I mean, this is worldwide, and they say it is to align everything globally, which is something we've been doing a lot more in the past 18 months, which is great, but. It's much more of an issue in like Canada, the U.S., South Africa, countries that allow civil marriages and your temple sealing at once. Because you can't, in the U.K., for example, any marriage has to be in a publicly accessible building by law to be witnessed, and temple's not publicly accessible. So the U.K., like most countries, yeah, you just get married at the courthouse or wherever you want to get married, and then go to the temple. And you do have an allotted amount of time to get to the nearest one. It doesn't have to be the same day. I'd say in most places in the UK, you could feasibly get married the same day and make it to the London or Preston temple. But anyway, you have like 3 days or something like that. Now, the norm around the world for the most part is, depending on proximity to one, you have X number of days. So this does change it for everybody, meaning that even that doesn't matter anymore. You know, you can, yeah. You don't have this mega day limit. I'm sure you want to get sealed as soon as you can, but even if you're in the UK and you say, you know what, it's too hard to get to Preston until 6 days from now or next weekend, we'll get married civilly this weekend and then we'll go to the temple next weekend. I don't know, you know, something like that could.
Yeah. Do you think the stigma will perpetuate as far, because it says that you should still be encouraged to marry in the temple, you're right, with the wedding. ceremony as well. But do you, so do you think, because I think back to the change in the age for sister missionaries, now they serve missions at 19. And this I saw my niece who just recently turned 19, and it was, she has really been, you know, and she decided not to serve a mission. And, but it's almost, there's this like new stigma there that's like, well, you know, it's, you can go at 19. Of course you're going to serve, right? It's like, it's almost shifted for.
So that, that's really interesting. So now women are feeling, I mean, I know this is just anecdotal, but is this true that women are feeling the pressure like men have? Like, why would you not be going on a mission now?
Oh, absolutely.
Because before it's always been, you know, with women, it's been treated as, if you want to do this, great. And, but honey, if you come home and you're not into it, then that's fine too. We'll find a nice young man for you. And that's it.
Yeah. And I'm so far removed from, you know, being 19 or having a 19-year-old that as she, you know, she sort of shared with the family sort of getting emotional that she wasn't going. And I sort of looked at her like, wait, is this a thing? And I talked to her about it. And she's like, yeah, there's a lot of people she interacts with that they assume first that she's going on a mission. And then when she says she's not, it's sort of this, oh.
That's so interesting. Okay. And we shouldn't do that. I mean, I know we're working on that. I mean, part of that's why they changed the whole mission application process. Is that last year now or earlier this year? I think it was late last year, where everyone applies to go on a mission the same way, and then you're assigned either a proselytizing mission or a service mission or whatever it may be. And I think part of that, or they might say you don't have to serve and you are honorably, you know, I'm blanking on the word. Not
really. Honorably released?
No, not released. You're honorably
pardoned.
Pardoned. Let's say pardoned. I'm totally blanking on the word I'm supposed to use right now, but we'll say pardoned. Why not?
So I'm curious if this stigma, if the exempted. So I wonder if there's sort of a new stigma that will come from, like, you know, or I guess it's, or perpetuate the same stigma of like, oh, you're not being married in the temple. Well, you know, why aren't you doing it? You know, it's almost seen as a higher law to do that, which
it is. I hope the stigma goes away, because if anything, we think we're talking about one part of this. But I think there's the whole other side of it with people who come from part or non-member families. And I think for a long time, we've tried to have this idea of telling them like this, you know, you tell your family like this is a sacrifice. This is a thing. This is, you know, this is an important part of your life. And it stinks that they're not in the temple with you. But if they can understand how important this is to you, and that can teach them something about the church. But by and large, what I've seen is it just like hurts families' feelings. And that's it. You know, and I think this is great now, because now, quite honestly, if someone wants to have a big party time wedding and have their reception and all that stuff, and then just go get sealed in the temple like the next morning or whatever they want to do, then they can. And their families feel like they're part of the process of them actually getting married. I wonder how much of a change we'll see on that front. If essentially all the, you know, like I said, non-part member families, if by and large they will change their wedding plans. I even saw Peggy Fletcher Stack asking on Facebook today if anybody is doing that already, if she could like talk to those people and learn from their experience, you know, if they're changing your wedding plans, if you're saying, nope, I'm not going to do the whole ring ceremony. And that's another thing. Will ring ceremonies just kind of die now?
Yeah.
Is that it?
You assume so.
Which would be good, because most I've been to are weird. It's just a strange thing to do.
Or I wonder, and I'm fascinated with our culture, but like if people do a civil ceremony, it might be assumed that they're being sealed later, right? So I can see many individuals sort of approach those newlyweds saying, oh, so are you being sealed this week or next week? And maybe they're not. And then it's sort of like where before you just knew, oh, they're being married civilly. So there must be something going on. I'm not going to ask about it. So maybe there's some awkward conversations on their
horizon. It goes back to this bigger issue in the church that I think especially under the Nelson administration, where I think we're sort of trying to address more, which is like quit judging people and making assumptions and just support people and love them and let them live their lives and know that we're all figuring it out. I think it's great. I have plenty of friends who've been in situations where it's been hurtful for their families not to be able to be part of their civil and temple wedding. I think where it's available, it's still a great convenience. Like if I were getting married today, I would still prefer to do it all in one fell swoop, you know, and let that just be the thing. But that's for me, you know, I'm not everybody, and that's fine.
Right. Yep.
It's a cool change. Another thing that quietly came out after the big info drop about the sealing change, which by the way, happened on a Monday. The church has been doing Friday info drops lately. So I thought it was interesting. The temples are closed on Mondays. So
Keep us guessing.
Maybe that's why they did it on Monday. They also told us that all returned missionaries, by the way, friends, notice the phrasing there. It is returned missionaries. They are not called return missionaries. You are not a return missionary. I know it's because I'm a copy editor and stuff, but
this is such a Jeff issue. Nobody else has even thought of this.
I have. Every time I see it, I think you're like a dumb Utahn. That's what I think when I see return missionaries.
Whoa. Time out.
I'm not saying all Utahns are dumb, but I am saying all dumb people are Utahns. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I've had it. I'm so, taking off my mic. I'm leaving. I'm out of here.
Well, I'm doing this all on Zencaster, so I got the whole thing anyway.
Ah, oh, you got me. All right.
But anyway, all returned missionaries are now pre-approved to be in BYU Pathway Worldwide's Pathway Connect. Now, I don't know if does Pathway Connect differ from Pathways itself. I've never done the program, and I don't know the ins and outs of it.
I don't know.
But essentially, this is saying, hey, if you go on a mission, the church, no matter what, globally, the church is going to open a door for you to obtain higher education. Period.
They assume the cell.
Period. And that's awesome. Pathway has been such a cool program in general, really extending educational opportunities to many folks. Incidentally, I've talked to some people on the inside who've said that while Pathways has been surging and growing, the Perpetual Education Fund has been sort of tanking and is not really being managed very well at the same. So I don't know if there's a correlation causation thing there or not, but it's great that Pathways is being successful, and it's Pathway Connect is a one-year program, okay? So it's not the full thing. It's a one-year program designed to help students learn to succeed at university studies and then prepare them to continue on. But even that's huge. I mean, I think a mission, ideally, if you do it right, quote-unquote, can help prepare you for some of the rigors of college or work life, whatever it may be, whatever you choose to do. But then they got this great extra opportunity to get where they need to be to continue on.
Yeah, it's cool.
Get an education. The Lord wants us to obtain an education and learn things and apply that and grow.
Yeah, I think those transitions in life are crucial, and it's cool to see them implement something like this that will hopefully smooth that landing for them. So, where are we going next, Jeff?
It's your turn, man. My wife is WhatsApping me from the plane, so you just do something right now.
Hey, she should have that on airplane mode. Just saying, no.
Now Southwest, totally free, lets you use WhatsApp or iMessage if you have an iPhone.
Oh, nice. And that's who's sponsoring our episode today.
Brought to you by Southwest Airlines. Everyone get their Southwest, get their credit card. Go get it.
So none of these other articles really stand out to me other than the other side of heaven. The Other Side of Heaven 2 is rated PG-13.
You are our resident.
Go to it.
You are the resident.
You're a sinner.
R-rated movie expert. Yeah. So tell us what
I am.
What is this?
I have been justifying rated R movies since I wrote that article, which I was doing exactly the opposite in that article. So when was that, Jeff? 2015, maybe. I wrote this article called
"At Least
Stop It with a Rated R Thing," and it seems like every year there's a movie that sort of is the movie everybody wants to justify.
You originally wrote it on November 7th, 2016.
Wow. And it went is it still your most popular joke?
I don't know if it's our all-time most popular one. Ironically, or probably our most viewed article is one that said that it's like 5 years ago. Multiple independent sources tipped us off. I guess they didn't, but multiple independent sources tipped us off that in the countries that do temple ceilings and civil ceremonies concurrently, that the church was going to abandon that policy and stop letting them happen at the same time. So it's kind of funny the temple news came out this week. We didn't even mention that. I wonder if that's a precursor to that actually happening. The assumption was that with gay marriage on the horizon, the church would stop being able to do them together. And so they were just going to stop doing them anyway. It didn't wind up happening, but that went gangbusters and crazy. But because it is false, I actually put a redirect up. You can't even read that article on our website anymore. Yeah. Anyway, but so, this is number two. This is probably number two.
Right. So anyways, the point being that my thesis in that was that never has the prophet or anybody directly said, we do not watch rated R movies. President Benson alluded to it, and even Elder Robbins talked about
how... Didn't President Kimball actually drop that one specifically?
Well, you show me the reference, Jeff!
Okay, you keep talking. I'm looking up.
Anyways, so my argument was, let's not use some secular organization, the Motion Picture Association or whatever, that gives these ratings, which is a U.S. organization. Let's actually approach media with a thoughtful approach of actually looking at the reviews and looking at content warnings and then make a decision whether to see it. rather than just saying, oh, it's PG-13, some liberal in Hollywood.
President Benson did say it once in general conference. He's the only one who mentioned him. He said, don't see... He said a lot of stuff. He said, don't see R-rated movies or vulgar videos or participate in any entertainment that is immoral, suggestive, or pornographic. That's his quote.
Right. So then you check out the Elder Robbins talk he gave at BYU, which is helpful that, you know, we don't set limits to these things. Anyways, the point being is that Other Side in Heaven is PG-13. So definitely be sure. No, actually, you definitely want to see this. I know the director because I'm famous, Jeff. And and he does great stuff. He's a great director. And I'm actually going to have him on my podcast.
Now, do you think the original was PG? You know, and there was storms and some thematic.
There's some nudity, Jeff.
Some thematic elements. I'm curious what will make this one, why will this one be PG-13?
Probably the F-bombs.
Yeah? Drug use?
Maybe somebody burns an American flag.
Well, that's what everyone's been joking about, is if he's going to turn around and just be like, dang it, bleeping, coldy pokey! But that's not going to happen. But I do wonder, I'm not in Utah. Obviously, I think most Latter-day Saints are pretty okay with PG-13 in general. That's the sweet spot for most filmmakers for blockbusters and such like that. But do we worry that for family-friendly content, something like The Other Side of Heaven, this should be a benign, uplifting film? Do we worry that parents are going to say, whoa, this is a little more intense than the PG thing. I'm going to hold off. Like, is it going to hurt the exposure or the box office of the film?
I know the director who was talking somewhere... and he said, you know, he wants to make movies that the whole nation sees, not 11 people in Provo or something like that. So I would imagine if you make a religious based movie and give it a PG rating, like, I think you might lose some of that other
audience.
That's
a fair point, because The Passion of the Christ is rated R and it's the highest grossing religious film ever made.
Okay. So touche, Jeff. Touche.
So now that we mention it, they should make that Book of Mormon movie true to the source material and everyone will go see it.
This is the problem with me coming on this podcast, is I don't have time to think of all angles, Jeff, but you always...
No. See, no, it's because I nerd out about like movie industry stuff. It's not even your fault. It's because I geek out about it, which incidentally, I saw Endgame over the weekend. Have you seen it yet?
Yes. Let's do a spoiler segment.
Do you want to do a quick one? We're at 40 minutes in right now. Let's do a quick one. Spoilers for the next. I'm going to do a hard cutoff at like... Right about 45 tops. We'll see. Because anyway, and the spoiler ban was lifted officially on Monday by the Russos. So they actually said like for major public, awesome. For major publications and stuff, they said, guys, can you please have like a moratorium on major spoilers for at least 2 weekends worth? So people who want to see it can see it. And then after that, if you want to write your think pieces that are more obvious. And then the trailer for the next Spider-Man movie came out, which on Monday,
that's a spoiler,
which directly references all sorts of things that happen. So yes, how did you like Endgame? It's time for the Latter-day Saint Film Corner, where we speak about a 3-hour movie with robots and villains and killing people.
Well, there are just so many parallels to, you know, pioneers and them crossing the plains.
No. Yes, singing as they walked, for example.
I loved it. I appreciate, I go to the movies and I'm not a big like comic book or Marvel guy. I mean, I appreciate them for what they are, but there's been so many movies. Like I went to this Endgame without seeing Black Panther or Captain Marvel. I did see Black Panther since I saw Endgame. And it's just, I don't know. Sometimes you're all these details and the Easter eggs and you're just
Black Panther was barely confused. He was probably in Infinity War more than he was even in Endgame. In Endgame, he just kind of showed up.
That's true.
And then he grabbed their little gauntlet and just kind of ran around for a little bit. And that was basically it.
And the only part I did a hard eye roll. Okay, here's the thing. I appreciate female superheroes for the sake of my 7-year-old has superheroes to get excited about and see strength and power of women. But to have this overproduced like nod to, you know, let's go get them, female Avengers. Remember that part?
Yeah, but they like kind of did that in Infinity War too.
Did they?
Yeah. When they were all fighting Thanos' little female lackey, and it was all the women who fought her there. But it was even more over the top this time. Yes, the women.
I mean, just like include them in the script and in the dialogue and in the venture. But let's.
Are you one of those trolls? You're one of those online trolls about Captain Marvel, aren't you? That's why you haven't seen it. You're one of the ones who was angry.
I'm not seeing no movie about a girl. No, of course not, Jeff. I'm going to see it, but it's still in the theaters, and
I was bummed out that. That they killed off Scarlett Johansson. Not just because they killed her off, but because I don't know if they were trying to go for some kind of parallel stuff with Infinity War, but it was because it was like the same sequence, right? I mean, eventually she goes, they show her body down at the bottom of the thing. The clouds open up to give the ring, and then they show Hawkeye instead of Thanos. It was like they kind of just copied it. I don't know if it was supposed to be a mirroring not. But I thought it would have been more profound. Of course, they couldn't like kill Hawkeye when you know his family's going to come back by the end, and then he's gone. But that would have been potent.
I really appreciated like the heart that was in this movie. Like that is, I think, very difficult to do. There were some sniffles in my theater.
They let the characters breathe. I mean, in a good way. While Infinity War was like nonstop, I remember watching it for 2.5 hours, and I was pretty much on the edge of my seat, just going, like my heart was just thumping the whole film because it was propulsive. Yeah. Endgame had. Took its time, like letting him grieve, dealing with all the fallout of stuff, but I appreciated it. I'd like to see it again, but I know I'll never find the time. I only got away with it this time because my wife was out of town, so I could go out with the boys on Friday night and go see it. It worked out.
Nice.
So it was good. I didn't think they'd kill off...
Did we pass our cutoff?
Not yet. I didn't think they'd kill off Tony Stark.
I know.
Did you see the...
But that's like...
Did you see the youth pastor who spoiled the movie? I love this stuff online. He's trying to make some point, and this we should talk about your leading Saints group because there was a post about that the other day too. So he's just like talking about like the world is tough. It's like then you see Endgame. He's like, and Tony Stark is dead, and all the kids start screaming like, "What?"
Yeah, and then somebody we had someone confirm this in our leading
in testimony group, meeting.
In testimony meeting, this older lady stands up and just leads off with Ender's Game, that's another book. The Endgame spoilers, you know, right in sacrifice.
What was her, did we ever,
I mean, one,
I never saw in the thread what her point was.
No, because I don't think anybody wants to spoil it for the rest of the internet. So hopefully,
but the spoiler ban has been lifted. Like, it's time to spoil.
That's right. But she made like a true attempt at creating a parallel from Avengers to.
I love it when people try really hard to like, work pop culture in a testimony meeting, and sometimes it makes sense, but I love it when it doesn't. And you can see someone just really, really wanted to talk about their pop culture thing, so they thought they could find some kind of spiritual. I was in a stake conference once with Elder Robert C. Wood, formerly of the 70, who that's
name drop.
It's a longer tale, but he was something of a celebrity of ours in our mission. We made up like characters for the general authorities and decided he was our favorite. We even made shirts with his picture on them. But anyway, so I was very excited when he was speaking in my home stake, and he quotes like Dumbledore. It was awesome. And I was like, yeah, man.
And he's like, Yoda once said, and they're like, oh, no.
I think I was in a meeting when an apostle once dropped some kind of Harry Potter or Star Wars reference or something. It's good to remember that they're people too, you know?
Right? Yeah. They go to movies too.
We're lifting the spoiler alert, even though there's no way for you to listen to it and know at this point. But here's what we'll do. We'll pause for 2 seconds, and if you look at the WAV file. Okay, everybody. Other news real quick, and we'll wrap it up.
Who looks at the WAV file?
Some people might look at the sound waves if you're streaming on the website.
Oh, okay.
So I loved this. This came out last week, and I'm sad that it's already left us. In the Gospel Library app, and apparently only on iOS. I don't think it ever worked on Android, as far as I could tell from anybody. You could go in and do what is basically a version of the Konami code, which if you ever played Contra as a kid on Nintendo, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start, that whole thing. They did the same thing on a certain screen. If you swipe up, do the same thing, kind of pushing up and down on your screen. It would then let you choose from, it would then change your icon of 6 different choices of icon. It would work your way through them. One of them made it gold Moroni, like all gold Moroni, but the best one by far was the Lego Moroni, which was amazing. This was just an Easter egg that some developers worked in there. I guarantee not telling any of the powers that be that this was.
You think they went rogue, Jeff? Especially now that they've pulled.
Yeah, considering within like a day of this story dropping, people were commenting that it no longer worked and the app had been updated to another version. I'm almost 100% certain somebody worked it in there and then powers that be caught it. You can't make Moroni out of a Lego. Update this app, young man.
Which is too bad because I think it's sort of fun, right? I mean, I think most people think it's fun and
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think it's just like a it's a funny little thing to do. I wish I could have a Lego Moroni on my phone, but I have Android in the church.
What other aspects of our church experience would you wish someone would insert a funny little thing? Well, what if we had an option of like temple recommend design?
Well, I was going to say the endowment in general could use more comedy.
Oh my gosh. No, Jeff.
I mean, you asked.
You took it too far. You did. Too fast.
I mean, with the old movie, sometimes it was funny for reasons that unintentional reasons. Okay, what could we do that you want? I mean, all the apps are great. I think it's fun to get the FM group app just to troll the FM group. That's a good time if anybody's looking for it. It's the equivalent of ding dong ditching, really.
Can anybody get that app?
Anybody can download the FM group app, as far as I'm aware.
And like submit issues with the building?
Yeah, what you can actually do is if you look around, like I think in the Gospel Library app, any of the church's apps, you dig around in your settings and you'll find one that says basically other related apps. And that actually have links to download any of the other apps the church actually creates. So you don't have to fish around in your app store. You can find out every single one of them right there. So I wish this stuck. It was a funny thing, and we all need funny things. It was great.
I know. We want it back. We're starting a petition. Bring the Lego man, Lego Moroni back.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to hit up on here, Kurt, this week before we...
I want to plug your awesome motherhood series that's going on. Right. People need to check that out. I listened to the first one, and it's very NPR-ish, and you know how I feel about NPR.
Yes, based on previous.
In a good way, and very well organized, thought out.
I'll pitch this one. So Josie Gleave, one of our contributors, who's based in Australia, decided to do, she's doing a three-part series on motherhood. This is sort of extra twim, like we're publishing them on Sundays. The next one should be up this coming Sunday, part two. And she's exploring motherhood, what it means. The first episode is sort of about what defines being a mother. And she's interviewing women from around the world. This first episode had interviews with sisters from Kenya and Taiwan. They talk about some really real life experiences. But it's all very positive. And like you said, it is, I guess you could say, NPR-esque with the way we have segments and I put some music in and all kinds of fun things. But it's really good. It's a fun thing that we're doing. We haven't tried something like that this before, sort of a little mini series. So keep an eye on it. It's in the same feed. So like before this episode, 422, 421, right beneath it is part one of this series. Thank you for the plug there. Check that out, friend. Otherwise, you know, keep an eye out. I think we'll have another edition of Latter-day Saint Video Vault up on Friday, I hope. So,
what's it going to be this week?
I'm not going to reveal, but I loved the last one because it was Greater Love, which is a film I genuinely appreciate. If you don't remember that one, it's when the girl finds out her brother, she just has to like give blood for her brother or something like that. That's all it is, just giving blood.
Uh-huh.
But she thinks she's going to die by giving her blood so her brother can live. And no one tells her otherwise. So this whole time, like I almost get like emotional even telling a story like that because this sweet little girl genuinely thinks that she's going to give up her life so her brother can live. And it's from the 80s. It's a classic good church film. So the next one you'll have to wait and see. Find out.
Jeff, I sent you a link of another podcast that did a four-part series about Mormon films. Did you listen to that by chance?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well. We won't talk about
it.
You
sent it to me while I was in California.
I think
yeah,
so.
Okay. I'll backtrack and try to find it, but I don't.
So I'll just mention it. The podcast is Strangerville. I don't listen much to this podcast.
Oh yes,
but it's
okay.
I remember
I saw it. Yes.
And the guy that did it, he's actually he's a former member of the church, but he's very respectful of the church in general. I mean, it's not like a hit piece by any means, but he just goes back and watches some of these films that he saw as a young seminary student that from the 80s and such that he watched in the 90s or early 2000s. And he just talks about them like some, you know, he does a whole episode on the phone call, which we had
that on one of our video vault episodes. The phone call's great. I love the phone call. The phone call one was very interesting because the director of it actually reached out to Jared, who writes these articles, and like told him some more behind the scenes stuff of how it was made and all. He talked about how the lead, Mark McClure, the guy who stars in it, found out he was going to be in Back to the Future while they were making it. Like, because if you've seen Back to the Future, he plays Marty McFly.
Oh, really?
He plays Marty McFly's older brother.
Brother, yeah.
The one Dave, who once he gets a job at the office, still for some reason lives with his parents in the better 1985. Whatever.
You've got to interview that guy, Jeff.
I don't think he's LDS.
The director of
football. I should. So, yeah, man.
See, those are the type of people I can never justify interviewing on for my podcast. But you, yeah, this is
figures in
this week.
Yes, esoteric figures in pop culture. That's how we.
That's right.
Figure. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody,
make it happen.
It's been a great week in Mormon news. B be back here this week. This Sunday, you'll get more motherhood stuff. And sometime next week, we will record once more to talk about the issues facing all of you as Latter-day Saints. I'd like to thank Kurt Frankum, my dear friend, who I've only met once in person. And we had Froyo, and my son tried to run behind the counter at Yogurtland and do things. And it was wonderful. And Kurt, I love you like a brother.
Yeah,
well, maybe not a brother. I love you like a cousin-in-law. Yeah, I'll give you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you definitely don't love me as much as Bruce Bingham, but
have you seen that man? Oh my goodness.
He's like
the Delaney jokes with more height. It's amazing.
But I encourage all people listening here that you can also find my podcast, Leading Saints, on the same place you're listening to this one. And check out the Elder Callister interview. And
the student has become the teacher, everyone. Kurt definitely out-downloads us at this point. So make sure to go to them.
Do I really?
I'm pretty sure you do now.
Okay, yeah. I can retire now. Yeah. I can retire.
I think you passed that a long time ago. You're good. Don't worry.
Nice.
You're doing great. But if you haven't subscribed to our show, you can do it in iTunes or on Android, or a lot of you stream from the browser, which is fine too. However you get your podcasts, we do exist on those channels, even Spotify. So please take the time to do that. And if you've never written a review on iTunes, I encourage you to do so. It's a great way for other people to find out the show exists and grow the family. And the last plug I will give you is patreon.com/thisweekinmormons, where if you, dear listener, would pledge $1 a month, it keeps the lights on, the servers flowing, and the computers humming, and whatever other verbs I can throw at you. Thanks very much for listening. Always nice of you to take the time to do so. For Kurt, I am Jeff. Be well, be holy, and be happy.